what do we do with the hardcore supremacists who, after years of consuming hate-filled, misleading information, only see the world from an I win, you lose, zero-sum point of view? Drew, do you want to take that first?
Sure. It's a difficult question because I've thought about that a great deal myself. Like, what do you do with people who you sort of think are ideologically so different from you or so far gone? I've stopped thinking about things in terms of the worst kinds of white people or the worst kinds of racists, because those aren't the people I'm concerned with. I think about things now in terms of like the people who are being oppressed, the people who are being left out and maligned and things like that. So rather than thinking about Bill, who we all know has been a racist this whole time, and how are we going to integrate Bill into society, we think about what society means, we redefine it, and understand that, oh, Bill doesn't want to be a part of that because he's racist. We make racism a disqualifying factor. So we no longer are trying to go back out and rehab all these people. These racists know they're wrong. That's the thing here. That's the sort of the surprise. There's nobody out there that's racist that think they're doing the right thing or that feel like it's a true thing. And even if they are, there has to be some kind of consequence. Right now, racists pay nothing for being racist in public or elsewhere. And until we have that kind of consequence, until we are ready to commit to the pain of change, which sometimes is going to include cutting certain people out or making there be a social cost for these kinds of behaviors, we will continue down this path of just denigrating people who don't deserve it.
Mrs. Elliott, what do you make of my question?
We have to remember that when we teach school children that Columbus discovered America, we have wiped out the fact that 20,000 to 10,000 years before Columbus was even a gleam in his father's eye, people from Africa came to this country and discovered it. It's time to start telling the truth about who discovered this continent. And it was not discovered by melanemic people. It was discovered by melanotic people, which means people with a lot of melanin in their skin. People, we've got to start telling the truth about this. Do you have any idea at all of how much talent, intelligence, creativity we have lost by putting down people of color? I think you don't know what we've lost. I think you haven't cared. You haven't thought about it. You haven't realized that in the DNA of every human being living on the face of the earth runs a percentage of their DNA which came from a country in Africa. We all came from the same place. And now we are here on this continent, and it's time to fix this mess that we have created.
Oh, Mrs. Elliott, I want to sort of piggyback on what you just said. There's a certain thought process out there by people who hold really virulent white supremacist views that everything good came from the West. Everything progressive and worthwhile in this world came from European descendants of Europeans. And I would like for you both to deal with that. Mrs. Elliott, would you like to go first?
Oh, sure. But if I go first, he won't get a chance to talk. Read Anthony Browder. I'm sorry. Read Anthony Browder's book, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization. And one of the things that you're going to learn when you read that is 4,000 years before the birth of Jesus Christ, people in Egypt, which is a country in Africa, it is not in the Middle East, it's in Africa, were doing cataract surgery with metal instruments before such a thing was ever heard of, before there were people to take care of things like that on this continent. You need to realize that if you're going to study Black history, you have to study about 6,000 years of Black history. We don't want to talk about that. We want to pretend that everything good that ever happened on the face of the earth was done by melanemic males.
Well, as a Black person who is also a jazz musician, I'm like living evidence that's not the case. The greatest American art form ever. If you also want to go to rock and roll, just staying in music, that's also Black and came from Black people and Black traditions using European instruments. So it's the converse of the claim that they're making. So no, just flat out on a factual level. But otherwise, like there's so many, like we cannot call ourselves a melting pot and then say it comes from one place. We don't get to make claim to both, right? So on just a basic level, if we're going to say we're people from all over the place, which we are and always have been, then our ideas, our influences and everything else come from all over the place. They're flavored from everywhere. Claiming it all for the West just because it comes from America per se is a rhetorical nothing of an argument. At the end of the day, we can recognize that, yes, white people have contributed things. and so have Black people, but they're just, in the end, people. Like people in certain societies living under certain rules and all this other kinds of stuff. The idea that the West is somehow the greatest place ever runs contrary to my lived experience as a Black person in America driving down the road. I got pulled over like 7 times last year, and that was the lowest year because of COVID. Like, that we cannot make a claim to greatness while at the same time denying ourselves greatness with things like racism and other basic silliness.
How do you convince the a white America, from the most white supremacist to the most woke, if you want to use that word, how do you convince the majority of white America that white supremacy is not our problem as people of color, that it's everybody's problem, they're included? I mean, the one thing I always point to is that when a white supremacist decided to blow up the Murrah building in Oklahoma City, he killed 168 people, and a lot of those were white people. 700 injuries, a lot of those were white people. That's one example, but you know, how do you convince the white America that they have a skin in this fight? This is not just something that they need to be allyship for our benefit. This is something that benefits them as well.
It's gonna solve itself. Make no mistake about this. Within 30 years, Melanie Meek people will have lost their numerical majority in the United States of America. And that's one of the reasons you're having this upheaval right now, is because those of us who call ourselves white are scared to death of what's going to happen when people of color get power. And I will never forget the woman at the University of Houston who said, well, if those people get power, aren't they going to want to treat us the way we've treated them? I said, that's your fear, isn't it, that they're going to want to get even? So I said to the audience, 1,500 people and half of them Black, I said, well, every person in this room who considers himself or herself Black and who wants to get even with all white folks, please stand. 3 young Black males stood. The rest of them just looked at him like, are you crazy? And I said, this woman, are you more comfortable now? And she said, yes, I am. I said, now let's be honest about this. Every Black person in this room who wants to get in with 1 or 2 white people, please stand. They all leaped to their feet, cheering and laughing and high-fiving one another. And all of a sudden it was like, yeah, there it is. That's what we want. If Ms. white Elliot, people have to know.
I am so glad you said that, though. I just wanted to jump in. And I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I have heard that this thought process is out there, and I can tell you from my little corner of the world and my family and you know, the people that I know and just my understanding of how we as a group tend to think. I mean, we just want to live, you know. We just want to eat, go to school, have a little money for entertainment, and take a vacation every now and then. We want to live. We don't. Time wasted on revenge, you know, it's not time well spent. And I would venture to say, you know, other racial demographics as well. I mean, the Latinx community. I mean, they just want to live, right? I mean, Asian community here, and you know, they just want to live. They just want to, you know, have families and grow up and be old and happy. I mean, I would say we all feel that way.
Well, what we're promised in the Constitution, which is equal treatment under the law, equal treatment under the law. That's all we all want. But we don't want the same treatment. We want equal treatment.
Drew, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I do. So I have a particular challenge, and I think Black people who are in my situation have a particular challenge in engaging white people and getting them to do stuff. Like, I live in a town of about 10, 11,000, and there are 50 Black people. Oh, 48, because a family just moved out. in this town, what I find is white folk are willing to step up to the line and say this is wrong, but not commit to the pain of change. That is, pay the price of flipping this over so that we include more people, that we invest in more people, that we bring more people in, and that sometimes we take a loss because of the cost of racism. That's a difficult thing to sell, pain. You know what I mean? But at the same time, the only way to bring, like, that's the only way to bring us together is to say, this is harming all of us. When we're harming Janiqua, when we're harming Drew, when we're harming all these people, we're harming ourselves. We have to recognize that these aren't disparate groups, but these are our circles. This is our community, ours. How can we let this happen where we live? We have to have that kind of pride and self-care and self-love enough that we project that onto other people. So when I see somebody that's not me, I don't think there goes one of them. I think there goes one of me. and I treat
That's
them
right.
that way. Rather than just, you know, like these different groups exist and they have their own power politically and whatever else. But the actions we need to take to resolve all of this, which I agree with her, this is just going to go away naturally. But in the interim, we really need to take responsibility for making us us rather than just saying it and doing the work of unity rather than just the dream of it.
And Mrs. Jane Elliott, Drew John Ladd, thank you so much. Great conversation.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.